"All the better. We were told to bring you anyway," said a second voice. It had a broad, coarse accent. "You have no idea how Capricorn longs to hear your voice. He's got great faith in your abilities, Capricorn has." "That's right. The replacement Capricorn found for you makes a terrible hash of it," the rasping voice again. "Look at Cockerel there." Maggie heard feet scraping on the floor. "He's limping, and Flatnose's face has seen better days. Not that he was ever much of a beauty." "Don't just stand there talking, Bastard. We haven't got forever. How about it? Can we take the kid as well?"
Another voice. That one sounded as if the speaker's nose were being pinched.
"No," Mo snapped at him. "My daughter stays here, or I won't give you the book."
One of the men laughed.
"Oh, yes, Silvertongue. You'd give it to us all right, but don't worry. We weren't told to bring her. A child would just slow us down, and Capricorn's been waiting for you long enough already, so where's the book?"
Maggie pressed her ear against the wall so hard that it hurt. She heard footsteps, and then a sound like something being pushed aside. Eleanor, beside her, held her breath.
"Not a bad hiding place," said the cat-like voice. "Wrap it up, Cockerel, and take good care of it. After you, Silvertongue. Let's go."
They left the library. Maggie tried desperately to wriggle out of Eleanor's arms. She heard the sound of the library door closing, and then steps moving away, getting fainter and fainter. After that, all was still. Quite suddenly, Eleanor let go of her. Maggie rushed to the door, unlocked it, sobbing, and ran down the corridor to the library. It was deserted. No Mo. The books stood ranged tidily on their shelves, except in one place, where there was a wide, dark gap. Maggie thought she saw a hinged flap, well hidden, standing open among the books.
"Incredible," she heard Eleanor saying behind her. "They really were after just that one book."
But Maggie pushed her aside and ran along the corridor.
"Maggie!" Eleanor called after her. "Wait!"
But what was there to wait for? For the strangers to take her father away? She heard Eleanor running after her. Eleanor's arms might be stronger, but Maggie's legs were faster. There was still no light in the entrance hall. The front door stood wide open, and a cold wind blew in Maggie's face as she stumbled breathlessly out into the night.
"Mo!"
she shouted. She thought she saw car headlights come on where the drive disappeared into the trees, and an engine started. Maggie ran that way. She tripped and fell, grazing her knee on the gravel, which was wet with dew. Warm blood trickled down her leg, but she took no notice. She ran on and on, limping and sobbing, until she had reached the big wrought-iron gate. The road beyond it was empty. Mo was gone. Chapter 7 What the Night Hides. Dustfinger was hiding behind a chestnut tree when Maggie ran past him. He saw her stop at the gate and look down the road. He heard her calling her father's name in a desperate voice. Her cries, as faint as the chirping of a cricket in the vast black night, were lost in the darkness. And when she gave up, it was suddenly very quiet, and Dustfinger saw Maggie's slim figure standing there as if she would never move again. All her strength seemed to have forsaken her, as if the next gust of wind might blow her away. She stood there so long that Dustfinger eventually closed his eyes so as not to have to look at her. But then he heard her weeping, and his face turned hot with shame. He stood there without a sound, his back to the tree trunk, waiting for Maggie to go back to the house. But still she didn't move. At last, when his legs were quite numb, she turned like a marionette with some of its strings cut and went back toward the house. She was no longer crying as she passed Dustfinger, but she was wiping the tears from her eyes, and for a terrible moment he felt an urge to go to her, comfort her, and explain why he had told Capricorn everything. But Maggie had already passed him and had quickened her pace as if her strength were returning. Faster and faster she walked, until she had disappeared among the black trees. Only then did Dustfinger come out from behind the tree, put his backpack on his back, pick up the two bags containing all his worldly goods, and stride off toward the gate, which was still open. The night swallowed him up like a thieving fox. Chapter 8. Alone. Eleanor was standing in the brightly lit doorway of the house when Maggie came back. She had put on a coat over her nightdress. The night was warm, but a cold wind was blowing from the lake. How desperate the child looked, and lost. Eleanor remembered the feeling. There was nothing worse.
"They've taken him away!"
Maggie's voice almost choked in her helpless rage. She glared angrily at Eleanor.
"Why did you hold me back? We could have helped him!"
Her fists were clenched as if she wanted to hit out blindly. Eleanor remembered that feeling, too. Sometimes you wanted to lash out at the whole world. But it did no good, none at all. The grief remained.
"Don't talk such nonsense," she said bluntly. "How could we have helped him? They'd just have taken you, too. And how would your father have liked that? Would it have done him any good? No. So don't stand around here any longer. Come indoors."
But Maggie didn't move.
"They're taking him to Capricorn,"
she whispered so softly that Eleanor could hardly make out what she was saying.
"Taking him where?"
Maggie just shook her head and wiped her sleeve over her tear-stained face.
"The police will be here any minute," said Eleanor. "I called them on your father's cell phone. I never wanted one of those, but now I think I'd better get one after all. They simply cut my phone line."
Maggie still hadn't moved. She was trembling. "They'll be well away by now anyway," she said.
"Good heavens! I'm sure no harm will come to him."
Eleanor wrapped her coat more closely around her. The wind was getting up. There would be rain soon, she felt sure.
"How do you know?"
Maggie's voice was trembling with anger. Heavens, thought Eleanor, if looks could kill, I'd be pushing up the daisies.
"Because he went with them of his own free will," she said crossly. "You heard him too, didn't you?"
Maggie bowed her head. Of course she'd heard him.
"Yes," she whispered. "He was more worried about the book than me."
Eleanor had no answer to that. Her own father had been firmly convinced that books deserved more attention than children, and when he suddenly died, she and her two sisters had barely noticed his absence. It was as if he was just sitting in the library, as usual, dusting his books. But Maggie's father wasn't like that.
"Nonsense! Of course he was worried about you," Eleanor said. "I don't know any father who's more besotted with his daughter than yours. You wait and see. He'll be back soon. Now do come in."
She reached out her hand to Maggie.
"I'll make you some hot milk with honey. Isn't that what children get when they're really miserable?"
But Maggie ignored the hand. She turned suddenly and ran away as if something had suddenly occurred to her.
"Here, wait a minute."
Muttering crossly, Eleanor slipped her feet into her gardening shoes and stumbled after her. The silly girl was running around behind the house to the place where the fire-eater had given his performance. But of course there was no one on the lawn now, just the burnt-out torches still stuck in the ground.
"Well, well, so Master Matchstick Swallower seems to be gone too," said Eleanor. "At least he's not in the house."
"Perhaps he followed them."
The girl went up to one of the burnt-out torches and touched its charred head.
"That's it. He saw what happened and followed them."
She looked hopefully at Eleanor.
"Of course, that's what must have happened."
Eleanor really did try hard not to sound sarcastic. "How do you think he followed them?" she added silently in her mind. "On foot?" But instead of saying so out loud, she put a hand on Maggie's shoulder. Heavens above, the girl was still shaking.
"Come on," she said. "The police will be here soon, and there's nothing we can do just now." Your father will surely turn up again in a few days' time, and perhaps your fire-breathing friend will be with him. You'll just have to put up with me in the meantime."
Maggie merely nodded, and unresistingly let Eleanor lead her back to the house.
"On one condition, though," said Eleanor as they reached the front door.
Maggie looked at her suspiciously.
"While we're here on our own, do you think you could stop looking at me as if you wanted to poison me all the time? Could that be arranged?"
A small, sad little smile stole over Maggie's face.
"I should think so," she said.
The two policemen, whose car drew up on the gravel forecourt a little later, asked a lot of questions to which neither Eleanor nor Maggie had many answers. No, they had never seen the men before. No, they hadn't stolen money, nor anything else of value, just a book. The two men exchanged amused glances when Eleanor said that. She immediately gave them an angry lecture on the value of rare books, but that only made things worse. When Maggie finally said they'd be sure to find her father if they tracked down a bad man called Capricorn, they looked at each other as if she had seriously claimed that Mo had been carried off by the big bad wolf. Then they drove away again, and Eleanor took Maggie to her room. The silly child had tears in her eyes once more, and Eleanor hadn't the faintest idea of how you went about comforting a girl of 12, so she just told her,
"Your mother always slept in this room," which was probably the worst thing she could have said. She quickly added, "Read a story if you can't get to sleep,"
cleared her throat twice, and then went back through the dark, empty house to her own room. Why did it suddenly strike her as so big and so empty? In all the years she had lived alone here, it had never troubled her to know that only her books awaited her behind all the doors. It was a long time since she and her sisters had played hide-and-seek in the many rooms. How quietly they always had to slip past the library door. Outside, the wind rattled the shutters of the windows. "Heavens, I won't be able to sleep a wink," thought Eleanor. And then she thought of the book waiting beside her bed. And with a mixture of anticipation and a very guilty conscience, she disappeared into her bedroom. Chapter 9. A Poor Exchange. Maggie didn't sleep in her own bed that night. As soon as Eleanor's footsteps had died away, she ran to Mo's room. He hadn't unpacked yet, and his bag stood open beside the bed. Only his books were on the bedside table, and a partly eaten chocolate bar. Mo loved chocolate. Even the mustiest old chocolate Santa Claus wasn't safe from him. Maggie broke a square off the bar and put it in her mouth. But it tasted of nothing. Nothing but sadness. Mo's quilt was cold when she crept under it, and the pillow didn't yet smell of him either, only of laundry detergent. Maggie put her hand under the pillow. Yes, there it was. Not a book. A photograph. Maggie drew it out. It was a picture of her mother. Mo always kept it under his pillow. When she was little, she believed that Mo had simply invented a mother for her one day because he thought she'd have liked to have one. He told wonderful stories about her.
"Did I like her?" Maggie always asked.
"Yes, very much."
"Where is she?"
"She had to go away when you were just 3.
"Why?"
"She just had to go away."
"A long way away?"
"Yes, a very long way."
"Is she dead?"
"No, I'm sure she isn't."
Maggie was used to the strange answers Mo gave to many of her questions. By the time she was 10, she no longer believed in a mother made up by Mo. She believed in one who had simply gone away. These things happened, and as long as Mo was there, she hadn't particularly missed having a mother. But now he was gone, and she was alone with Eleanor and Eleanor's pebble eyes. She took Mo's sweater out of his bag and buried her face in it. "It's the book's fault," she kept thinking. "It's all that book's fault. Why didn't he give it to Dustfinger? Sometimes when you're so sad you don't know what to do, it helps to be angry." But then the tears came back again, all the same, and Maggie fell asleep, with the salty taste of them on her lips. When she woke all of a sudden, her heart pounding and her hair damp with sweat, it all came back to her. The men, Moe's voice, the empty road. "I'll go and look for him," thought Maggie. "Yes, that's what I'll do." Outside, the sky was just turning red. Not long now, and the sun would rise. It would be better if she was gone before it got really light. Moe's jacket was hanging over the chair under the window, as if he'd only just taken it off. Maggie took his wallet out of it. She'd need the money. Then she crept back to her room to pack a few things, only the essentials. A change of clothing, and a photograph of herself and Moe so that she could ask people if they'd seen him. Of course she couldn't take her book box. She thought of hiding it under the bed, but instead she decided to write Eleanor a note. "Dear Eleanor," she wrote, although she didn't really think that was the correct way to address an aunt. "I have to go and look for my father," she went on. "Don't worry about me." Well, Eleanor wasn't likely to do that anyway. "And please don't tell the police I've gone, or they'll be sure to bring me back. My favourite books are in my box. I'm afraid I can't take them with me. Please look after them. I'll come and get them as soon as I've found my father. Thank you. Maggie. P.S. I know exactly how many books there are in the box." She crossed out that last sentence. It would only annoy Eleanor. And who knew what she might do with the books then? Sell them, probably. After all, Moe had given them all particularly nice bindings. None of them was bound in leather, because Maggie didn't like to think of a calf or a pig losing its skin for her books. Luckily, Moe understood how she felt. Many hundreds of years ago, he had once told Maggie, people made the bindings for particularly valuable books from the skin of unborn calves. Cata Virginia non nata, a pretty name for a terrible thing. And those books, Moe had told her, were full of the most wonderful words about love and kindness and mercy. While Maggie was packing her bag, she did her best not to think, because if she did, she knew she'd have to ask herself where she was going to search for Moe. She kept pushing the thought away, but all the same her hands slowed down, and at last she was standing beside her packed bag, no longer able to ignore the cruel little voice inside her. "Well then, where are you going to look, Maggie?" it whispered. "Are you going to turn left or right when you reach the road? You don't even know that. How far do you think you'll get before the police pick you up, a 12-year-old girl carrying a bag with a wild story about a father who's disappeared and no mother they can take her back to?" Maggie put her hands over her ears, but what use was that when the voice was inside her head? She stood like that for quite a long time. Then she shook her head until the voice stopped and dragged her bag out into the corridor. It was heavy, much too heavy. Maggie opened it again and put almost everything back in her room. She kept only a sweater, a book, she had to have at least one, the photo, and Moe's wallet. Now she could carry the bag as far as she had to. She slipped quietly downstairs with the bag in one hand and the note for Eleanor in the other. The morning sunlight was already filtering through the cracks of the shutters, but it was as silent in the big house as if even the books on the shelves were sleeping. Only the sound of quiet snoring came through Eleanor's bedroom door. Maggie really meant to push the note under the door, but it wouldn't fit. She hesitated for a moment, and then pressed the door handle down. It was light in Eleanor's bedroom, even though the shutters were closed. The bedside lamp was switched on, so obviously Eleanor had gone to sleep while she was reading. She was lying on her back, with her mouth slightly open, snoring at the plaster angel on the ceiling above her. And she was clutching a book to her chest. Maggie recognized it at once. She was beside the bed in an instant. "Where did you get that?" she shouted, tugging the book out of Eleanor's arms, which were heavy with sleep. "That's my father's!" Eleanor woke as suddenly as if Meggie had poured cold water over her face. "You stole it!" cried Meggie, beside herself with rage. "And you brought those men here. Yes, that's what happened. You and that Capricorn are in this together. You had my father taken away, and who knows what you did with poor Dustfinger. You wanted that book from the start. I saw the way you looked at it, like something alive. It's probably worth 1 million, or 2 million, or 3 million. Eleanor was sitting up in bed, staring at the flowers on her nightdress, and not saying a word. She didn't move until Meggie was struggling to get her breath back.
"Finished?" she asked. "Or are you planning to stand there, yelling your head off until you drop dead?"
Her voice sounded as brusque as usual, but it had another note in it too, a touch of guilt.
"I'm going to tell the police," cried Meggie. "I'll tell them you stole the book, and they ought to ask you where my father is."
"I saved you. And this book."
Eleanor swung her legs out of bed, went over to the window, and opened the shutters.
"Oh, yes? And what about Mo?"
Meggie's voice was rising again.
"What's going to happen when they realize he gave them the wrong book? It's all your fault if they hurt him. Dustfinger said Capricorn would kill him if he didn't hand over the book. He'll kill him!"
Eleanor put her head out of the window and took a deep breath. Then she turned around again.
"What nonsense!" she said angrily. "You think far too much of what that matchstick-eater says. And you've obviously read too many bad adventure stories. Kill your father! Heavens above! He's not a secret agent or anything dangerous like that. He restores old books. It's not exactly a life-threatening profession. I just wanted to take a look at the book in peace. That's the only reason I swapped it. How could I guess those villains would come here in the middle of the night to take your father away along with their precious book? All he told me was that some crazy collector had been badgering him for that book for years. How was I to know this collector wouldn't shrink from breaking and entering, not to mention kidnapping? Even I wouldn't think up an idea like that. Well, maybe for just one or two books in the world, I might.
But that's what Dustfinger said. He said Capricorn would kill him.
Meggie was clutching the book tightly, as if that were the only way of preventing yet more misfortunes from creeping out of it. It was as if she suddenly remembered Dustfinger's voice again.
"And the little creatures screeching and struggling," she whispered, "would be as sweet as honey to him."
"What? Who are you talking about now?"
Eleanor perched on the edge of the bed and made Meggie sit down beside her.
"You'd better tell me everything you know about this business. Begin at the beginning."
Meggie opened the book and leafed through the pages until she found the big N with the animal that looked like Gwyn sitting on it.
"Meggie, I'm talking to you."
Eleanor shook her roughly by the shoulders.
"Who were you talking about just now?"
"Capricorn,"
Meggie just whispered the name. Danger seemed to cling to it, to every single letter of it.
"Capricorn? Go on. I've heard you mention that name a couple of times before, but who for goodness sake is this Capricorn?"
Meggie closed the book, stroked the binding, and looked at it from all sides.
"It doesn't give the title on the cover," she murmured.
"No, not on the cover or inside."
Eleanor rose and went to her closet.
"There are a good many books where you can't find the title right away. After all, it's a relatively modern habit to put it on the cover. When books were still bound so that the spines curved inward, the title might be on the side, if anywhere. But in most cases, you found it out only when you opened the book. It wasn't until bookbinders learned to make rounded spines that the title moved to the cover of the book."
"Yes, I know," said Meggie impatiently. "But this isn't an old book. I know what old books look like."
Eleanor looked at her ironically.
"Oh, I apologize. I was forgetting you're a real little expert. But you're right, yes. This book isn't very old. It was published almost exactly 38 years ago. Ridiculously young for a book."
She disappeared behind her open closet door. But of course it has a title all the same. It's called Inkheart. I suspect your father intentionally bound it so that no one could identify it just from looking at the cover. You don't even find the title on the first page, and when you look carefully, you see that he's removed it, the title page. Eleanor's nightdress landed on the carpet, and Maggie saw a pair of tights being put on over her bare legs.
"We have to go to the police again," said Maggie.
"What for?" Eleanor threw a sweater over the closet door. "What are you going to tell them? Did you notice the way those two policemen looked at us last night?" Eleanor imitated them. "Oh, yes, what was that again, Signora Loredan? Someone broke into your house after you'd been kind enough to switch off the burglar alarm, and then this amazingly cunning burglar stole just one book, although there are books worth millions in your library, and they took this girl's father away after he'd offered to go with them in any case. Yes, very interesting. And it seems that these men were working for a man called Capricorn. Doesn't that mean goat or something? Heavens above, child." Eleanor emerged from behind the closet door. She was wearing an unattractive checked skirt and a caramel-coloured sweater that made her look as pale as dough. "Everyone living around this lake thinks I'm crazy, and if we go back to the police with this story, then the news that Eleanor Loredan has finally flipped will be all over the place, which just goes to show that a passion for books is extremely unhealthy."
"You dress like an old granny," said Maggie.
Eleanor looked down at herself. "Thank you very much," she said, "but comments on my appearance are uncalled for. Anyway, I could be your granny with a little stretch of the imagination."
"Have you ever been married?"
"No, why would I want to? And could you now kindly stop making personal remarks? Hasn't your father ever taught you that it's bad manners?"
Meggie did not reply. She wasn't sure herself why she had asked the question. "This book is very valuable, isn't it?" she asked.
"What? Inkheart?"
Eleanor took it from Maggie's hand, stroked the binding, and then gave it back.
"I think so. Although you won't find a single copy in any of the catalogues or lists of valuable books. But I'm sure that many collectors would offer your father a great deal of money if word got around that he has what may be the only copy. Actually, I found out quite a lot about it, and I believe it's not just a rare book, but a good one, too. I can't give an opinion on that. I scarcely managed a dozen pages last night. When the first fairy appeared, I fell asleep. I never was particularly keen on stories full of fairies and dwarves and all that stuff."
Eleanor went around behind the closet door again, obviously to look at herself in a mirror. Maggie's comment on her clothes seemed to be bothering her after all.
"Yes, I think it is very valuable," she repeated thoughtfully. "Although it's almost forgotten now, hardly anyone seems to remember what it's about. Hardly anyone seems to have read it. You can't even find it in libraries. But now and then these strange stories about it do crop up. They say it's been forgotten only because all the copies that still existed were stolen. I expect that's nonsense. Although it's not just plants and animals that die out, so do books. Quite often, I'm sorry to say. I'm sure you could fill 100 houses like this one to the roof with all the books that have disappeared forever."
Eleanor closed the closet door again and pinned up her hair with clumsy fingers.
"As far as I know, the author's still alive, but obviously he's never done anything about getting his book reprinted, which strikes me as odd. I mean, you write a story so that people will read it, don't you? Well, perhaps he doesn't like his own story any more, or perhaps it's just sold so badly that no publisher was willing to bring it out again. How would I know?"
"All the same, I don't think they stole it just because it's valuable," muttered Maggie.
"You don't?" Eleanor laughed out loud. "My word! You really are your father's daughter. Mortimer could never imagine people doing something bad for money, because money has never meant much to him. Do you have any idea what a book can be worth?"
Maggie looked at her crossly. "Yes, I do. But I still don't think that's the reason."
I do, and Sherlock Holmes would think so too. Have you ever read those books, by the way? Wonderful stuff, especially on rainy days.
Eleanor slipped on her shoes. She had strangely small feet for such a sturdily built woman.
Perhaps there's some kind of secret in it,
murmured Maggie thoughtfully, caressing the close-printed pages.
You mean something like invisible messages written in lemon juice, or a map hidden in one of the pictures showing where to find treasure?
Eleanor sounded so sarcastic that Maggie felt like wringing her short neck.
Why not?
Maggie closed the book again and put it firmly under her arm. Why else would they take Mo, too? The book would have been enough. Eleanor shrugged her shoulders.
Of course, she can't admit she never thought of that, Maggie told herself scornfully. She always has to be right.
Eleanor looked at Maggie as if she had guessed her thoughts.
Listen, I'll tell you what, why don't you read it? She said. You really might find something that you don't think belongs in the story. A few extra words here, a couple of unnecessary letters there, and there's your secret message. The signpost pointing to the treasure. Who knows how long it will be before your father comes back? You'll have to do something to pass the time here.
Before Maggie could answer that one, Eleanor bent to pick up a piece of paper lying on the carpet beside her bed. It was Maggie's goodbye note. She must have dropped it when she saw the book in Eleanor's arms.
"What on earth's this?" asked Eleanor when she had read it, frowning. "You were planning to go and look for your father. Where, for heaven's sake? You're even more foolish than I thought."
Maggie pressed Inkheart close to her.
"Who else is going to look for him?" she said.
Her lips began to tremble, and there wasn't a thing she could do about it.
"Well, then, we'll just have to go and look for him together," replied Eleanor, sounding annoyed. But first, let's give him a chance to come back. Do you think he'll be pleased to get back here only to find you've disappeared, gone looking for him in the big wide world?
Maggie shook her head. Eleanor's carpet was swimming before her eyes. A tear ran down her nose.
Okay, that's all settled then, growled Eleanor, offering Maggie a cotton handkerchief. Blow your nose and then we'll have breakfast.
She wouldn't let Maggie out of the house before she had eaten a roll and swallowed a glass of milk.
"Breakfast is the most important meal of the day," she announced, buttering her own third slice of bread. "And what's more, when your father gets back, I don't want you telling him I've been starving you, like the wicked stepmother in the fairy tale, you know."
An answer sprang to the tip of Maggie's tongue, but she swallowed it, along with the last of her roll, and took the book outside. Chapter 10 The Lion's Den. Maggie sat on the bench behind the house. Dustfinger's burnt-out torches were still stuck in the ground beside it. She didn't usually hesitate so long before opening a book, but she was afraid of what was waiting for her inside this one. That was a brand new feeling. She had never before been afraid of what a book would tell her. Far from it. Usually, she was so eager to let it lead her into an undiscovered world, one she had never been to before, that she often started to read at the most unsuitable moments. Both she and Mo often read at breakfast, and as a result, he had more than once taken her to school late. And she used to read under the desk at school, too, and late at night in bed until Mo pulled back the covers and threatened to take all the books out of her room so that she'd get enough sleep for once. Of course he would never have done such a thing, and he knew she knew he wouldn't. But for a few days after such a threat, she would put her book under her pillow around 9 in the evening and let it go on whispering to her in her dreams, so that Mo could feel he was being a really good father. She wouldn't have put this book under her pillow for fear of what it might whisper to her. For the very first time in her life, Maggie wasn't sure that she wanted to enter the world waiting for her between the covers of a book. All the bad things that had happened over the last 3 days seemed to have come out of this book, and perhaps they were only a faint reflection of what still awaited her inside it. All the same, she had to begin. Where else was she to look for Mo? Eleanor was right. There was no point in simply running off at random. She had to look for Mo's trail among the printed letters in Inkheart. But she had hardly opened it at the first page when she heard footsteps behind her.
"You'll get sunstroke if you keep on sitting in the full sunlight," said a familiar voice.
Maggie spun around. Dustfinger made her a bow. Of course, his face wore its usual smile.
"Well, what a surprise," he said, leaning over her shoulder and looking at the open book on her lap. "So it's here, after all. You've got it."
Maggie was still looking uncomprehendingly at his scarred face. How could he stand there acting as if nothing had happened? "Where have you been?" she snapped. "Didn't they take you too? And where's Mo? Where have they taken him?" She couldn't get the words out fast enough. But Dustfinger took his time answering. He examined the bushes all around as if he had never seen anything like them before. He was wearing his coat, although the day was so hot that perspiration stood out in gleaming little beads on his forehead.
"No, they didn't take me too," he said at last, turning to face Maggie again. "But I saw them drive off with your father. I ran after them, right through the undergrowth a couple of times. I thought I'd break my neck going down that wretched slope, but I got to the gate just in time to see them driving off south. Naturally, I recognized them at once. Capricorn had sent his best men. Even Buster was with them."
Maggie was staring at his lips as if she could make the words come out of them faster. "Do you know where they've taken Mo?" Her voice shook with impatience.
"To Capricorn's village, I think. But I wanted to be sure," said Dustfinger, taking off his coat and draping it over the bench. "So I ran after them. I know it sounds silly to run after a car," he added when Maggie frowned in disbelief. "But I was so furious. It had all been for nothing, my warning you, the three of us coming here. Well, I managed to hitch a lift to the next village. They'd filled up the fuel tank there. 4 men in black, not very friendly. And they hadn't been gone long, so I, borrowed a moped and tried to go on after them. Don't look at me like that. You can set your mind at rest. I took the moped back later. It wasn't particularly fast, but luckily the roads are very, very winding here, and I eventually saw them again far down in the valley while I was still making my way around the bends above them. So then I was sure they were taking your father to Capricorn's headquarters. Not to one of his hideouts farther north, but straight to the lion's den."
"The lion's den?" Maggie repeated. "Where is it?"
"About 300 kilometers south of here, I'd say."
Dustfinger sat down on the bench beside her and blinked as he peered at the sun.
"Not far from the coast."
Once again he looked at the book still lying on Maggie's lap.
"Capricorn's not going to be pleased when his men bring him the wrong book," he said. "I only hope he doesn't take his disappointment out on your father."
"But Mo didn't know it was the wrong book. Eleanor swapped them in secret."
There they came again, those infuriating tears. Maggie wiped her eyes on her sleeve. Dustfinger wrinkled his brow, looking at her as if he wasn't sure whether to believe her.
"She says she just wanted to look at it. She had it in her bedroom. Mo knew the secret place where she'd hidden it, and because the book they took was wrapped in brown paper, he never noticed it was the wrong one. And Capricorn's men didn't check either."
"Of course not. How could they?"
Dustfinger's voice was full of scorn.
"They can't read. One book is just like any other to them, just printed paper. Anyway, they're used to being given anything they want."
Maggie's voice was shrill with fear.
"You must take me to that village, please."
She looked pleadingly at Dustfinger.
"I'll explain everything to Capricorn and give him the book, and then he'll let Mo go, all right?"
Dustfinger blinked up at the sun again.
"Yes, of course," he said without looking at Maggie. "That's probably the only solution."
But before he could say any more, they heard Eleanor's voice calling from the house.
"Well, well, what have we here?"
she cried, leaning out of her open window, its pale yellow curtain flapped in the wind as if a ghost were caught in it. "If it isn't our friend the matchstick swallower!" Maggie jumped up and ran over the lawn toward her. "Eleanor, he knows where Mo is," she cried.
"Does he indeed?"
Eleanor leaned on the windowsill and scrutinized Dustfinger through narrowed eyes.
"Put that book down," she snapped at him. "Maggie, take the book away from him."
Taken aback, Maggie turned around. Dustfinger really was holding Inkheart, but when Maggie looked at him, he quickly put it back down on the bench. Then, with a nasty glance in Eleanor's direction, he beckoned her over. Hesitantly, Maggie went to him.
"Yes, all right. I'll take you to your father, even though it may be dangerous for me," whispered Dustfinger when she was beside him. "But she stays here, understand?"
He slyly nodded his head in Eleanor's direction. Maggie looked uncertainly at the house.
"Like me to guess what he whispered to you?" called Eleanor across the lawn.
Dustfinger cast Maggie a warning glance, but she ignored it.
"He's going to take me to Mo," she called back.
"A good idea," called Eleanor, "but I'm coming too, even if the pair of you might prefer to do without my company."
"We certainly might," muttered Dustfinger, smiling guilelessly at Eleanor.
"But who knows? Perhaps we can swap her for your father. I dare say Capricorn could do with another maidservant. I know she's no good at cooking, but perhaps she can do the laundry, even if that's not something you learn from books."
Maggie had to laugh, although she couldn't tell from Dustfinger's face if he was joking or meant it seriously. Chapter 11. A Coward. Dustfinger did not steal into Maggie's room until he was quite sure she was asleep. She had locked her door. Undoubtedly Eleanor had persuaded her to do that because she didn't trust him and because Maggie had refused to give Inkheart back to her. Dustfinger couldn't help smiling as he inserted the thin wire into the lock. What a stupid woman she was, in spite of all those books she'd read. Did she really think such an ordinary lock was any obstacle?
"Well, perhaps it might be for fat fingers like yours, Eleanor," he whispered to himself as he opened the door. "But my fingers play with fire, and it's made them quick and skillful."
His liking for Silvertongue's daughter was a more serious obstacle, and his guilty conscience didn't make matters any easier. Yes, Dustfinger did have a guilty conscience as he crept into Maggie's room, although he hadn't come to steal the book. Naturally, Capricorn still wanted it, the book and Silvertongue's daughter too. Those were his new orders. But that must wait. Tonight, Dustfinger was there for a different reason. Tonight, something that had been gnawing at his heart for years drove him to Maggie's room. He stood thoughtfully beside the bed, looking at the sleeping girl. Betraying her father to Capricorn had not been particularly difficult, but with her, it would be different. Her face reminded Dustfinger of another one, although no grief had yet left dark shadows on Maggie's childish features. Strange, every time the girl looked at him, he felt a wish to show her that he didn't deserve the distrust he always saw in her eyes, even when she was smiling at him. She looked at her father in a very different way, as if he could protect her from all the dark and evil in the world. What a stupid, stupid idea. No one would be able to protect her from that. Dustfinger stroked the scars on his face and frowned. Enough of such useless thoughts. He would bring Capricorn what he wanted, the girl and the book. But not tonight. Gwyn moved on his shoulder, trying to wriggle out of his collar, which he liked as little as he liked the dog's leash Dustfinger always carried with him. He wanted to go hunting, but Dustfinger wasn't letting him out. Last night, the marten had run away from him while he was talking to Basta. The furry little devil was still afraid of Basta. Dustfinger couldn't blame him. Maggie was sleeping soundly, her face buried in a grey sweater. probably her father's. She murmured something in her sleep, but Dustfinger couldn't make out what. Once again his guilty conscience stirred, but he pushed the tiresome feeling away. He couldn't do with that kind of thing, not now and not later. The girl was nothing to do with him, and he was quits with her father now. Yes, quits. He had no reason to feel like a miserable, double-dealing villain. He looked around the dark room in search of something. Where would Maggie put the book? There was a red box beside her bed. Dustfinger lifted the lid. Gwyn's chain clinked softly as he leaned forward. The box was full of books, wonderful books. Dustfinger took out the flashlight from under his coat and shone it on them. "Look at that," he murmured. "What beauties! Like a party of ladies dressed in their best to go to a prince's ball." Silver Tongue had probably rebound them after Meggy's little fingers had worn out the old bindings. Yes, of course, there was his sign, the unicorn's head. Each book bore it, and each was bound in a different colour. All the hues of the rainbow were gathered together in that box. The book Dustfinger was looking for was right at the bottom. With its silvery green binding, it looked plain, a poor thing among all the other grand and lordly volumes. It didn't surprise Dustfinger that Silvertongue had given this book such a plain dress to wear. Very likely Meggy's father hated it as much as he loved it. Dustfinger carefully extracted it from the other books. It was almost 9 years since he last had it in his hand. At the time, it had still had a cardboard binding and a torn paper dust jacket. Dustfinger raised his head. Maggie sighed and moved until her sleeping face was turned his way. How unhappy she looked. She must be having a nightmare. Her lips quivered, and her hands clutched the sweater as if she were looking for something or someone to give her security. But you are usually alone in nightmares, dreadfully alone. Dustfinger remembered many of his own bad dreams, and for a moment he was tempted to put out his hand and wake Maggie. What a soft-hearted fool he was. He turned his back to the bed. Out of sight, out of mind. Then he opened the book hastily before he could think better of it. His breathing was heavy, as if he had filled his mouth with liquid in preparation for breathing fire. He leafed through the first few pages and began to read, slowly turning page after page after page. But with every page his fingers hesitated a little longer, until suddenly he closed the book. Moonlight was seeping through the cracks in the shutters. He had no idea how long he had been standing there, his eyes lost in the labyrinth of letters. He had always been a very slow reader. "Coward," he whispered. "Oh, what a coward you are, Dustfinger." He bit his lips until they hurt. "Come on," he told himself. "This may be your last chance, you fool. Once Capricorn has the book, he'll never let you look at it again."
Once more he opened the book, leafed rapidly through to about the middle, and closed it again with a sound loud enough to make Maggie give a little start in her sleep and bury her head under the covers. Dustfinger waited motionless beside the bed until she was breathing regularly again, then leaned over her treasure chest with a deep sigh and put the book back under the others. Soundlessly he closed the lid.
"Did you see that, Gwyn?"
he whispered to the marten.
"I just dare not look. Wouldn't you rather find a braver master? Think it over."
Gwyn chattered softly in his ear, but if that was an answer, Dustfinger didn't understand it. For a moment, he went on listening to Meggy's quiet breathing, then stole back to the door.
"Well, what does it matter?"
he muttered when he was out in the corridor.
"Who wants to know the end of a story in advance?"
He climbed up to the attic bedroom Eleanor had given him, and lay down on the narrow bed, with the crates of books towering around it. But he could not sleep until morning came.
Chapter 12. going farther south. After breakfast the next morning, Eleanor spread a crumpled road map out on the kitchen table.
Right, 300 kilometers south of here, she said with a wary glance at Dustfinger. So show us exactly where we have to look for Meggie's father.
Meggie looked at Dustfinger, her heart thudding. There were dark shadows around his eyes as if he had slept very badly. Hesitantly, he came over to the table, rubbing his stubbly chin. He bent over the map, scrutinized it for what seemed an eternity, and finally pointed with his finger.
There, he said. Capricorn's village is right there.
Eleanor looked over his shoulder.
Liguria, she said. Aha! And what is the name of this village, if I may ask? Capricornia?
She was examining Dustfinger's face as if tracing his scars with her eyes.
It doesn't have a name, Dustfinger responded to her gaze with unconcealed dislike. I expect it had one once. But the name was already forgotten before Capricorn settled there. You won't find it on this map, or on any other either. To the rest of the world, the village is just a collection of tumble-down houses along what can hardly be called a road.
Eleanor bent closer to the map.
I've never been in that region. I was in Genoa once. I bought a very fine edition of Alice in Wonderland there, in good condition and for half what it was worth.
She looked inquiringly at Maggie.
Do you like Alice in Wonderland?
Not particularly, said Maggie, staring at the map. Eleanor shook her head at such childish folly and turned back to Dustfinger.
What does this Capricorn do when he's not stealing books and abducting people's fathers? She asked. If I understand Meggie correctly, you know him pretty well.
Dustfinger avoided her eyes and ran his finger along a blue river winding its way through the green and pale brown of the map.
We came from the same place, he said. But apart from that, we don't have much in common.
Eleanor looked at him so penetratingly that Maggie wouldn't have been surprised to see a hole suddenly appear in his forehead.
There's one thing that strikes me as strange, Eleanor said. Maggie's father wanted to keep Inkheart safe from this Capricorn, so why bring the book here to me? He was practically running into Capricorn's arms.
Dustfinger shrugged his shoulders.
Well, perhaps he just thought your library would be the safest hiding place.
A memory stirred in Meggie's mind. At first she couldn't identify it. But then it all came flooding back to her, perfectly clearly, as vivid as a picture in a book. She saw Dustfinger standing beside their camper van at the gate of the farmhouse, and it was almost as if she heard his voice again. She looked at him in horror.
"You told Mo that Capricorn was in the north," she said. "He specially asked, and you said you were sure of it."
Dustfinger examined his fingernails.
"Well, yes. Yes, that's right,"
he admitted without looking at Maggie or Eleanor. He just went on staring at his nails. Finally, he rubbed them on his sweater as if to remove an ugly mark.
"You don't trust me," he said hoarsely, still without looking at them. "Neither of you trust me. I can understand that, but I wasn't lying. Capricorn has two main headquarters and several smaller hideouts in case things get too hot for him, or one of his men needs to disappear for a while. He usually spends the summer months in the north and doesn't come south until October. But this year he's obviously spending the summer down in the south. How would I know why? Perhaps he had trouble with the police in the north. Perhaps he has business of some kind in the south and wants to see to it personally.
His voice sounded injured, like the voice of a child unjustly accused.
In any case, his men drove south with Maggie's father. I saw them go myself, and when Capricorn is in the south, he always does anything of importance in that village. He feels safe in it, safer than anywhere else. He's never had any trouble with the police there. He can act like a king, as if the whole world belonged to him. He makes the laws, he decides what happens, he can do or not do anything he likes. His men take care of that, believe you me, I understand these things.
Dustfinger smiled. It was a bitter smile. It seemed to be saying, if you only knew, but you don't know anything. You don't understand anything.
Maggie felt unease spread through her again. It was not caused by what Dustfinger said, but by what he wasn't saying. Nothing is more frightening than a fear you cannot name.
Eleanor seemed to be feeling the same.
For heaven's sake, don't make such a mystery of it, she snapped. I'm asking you again, what does this Capricorn do? How does he earn his money?
Dustfinger crossed his arms.
You won't get any more information out of me. Ask him yourself. Even taking you to his village could cost me dearly. So am I going to tell you about Capricorn's business? Not likely.
He shook his head.
I warned Meggie's father. I advised him to bring Capricorn the book of his own free will, but he wouldn't listen. If I hadn't warned him, Capricorn's men would have found him much sooner. Ask Meggie. She was there when I warned him. Okay, I didn't tell him everything I knew, so what? I talk about Capricorn as little as possible. I try not even to think of him, and you take my word for it. Once you know him, you'll feel the same.
Eleanor wrinkled her nose as if such an idea were too ridiculous for her to waste a single word on it.
So I assume you can't tell me why he's so keen to get hold of this book, she asked, folding up the road map. Is he some kind of collector?
Dustfinger ran his finger along the edge of the table.
All I'm going to tell you is that he wants this book, and that's why you'd better give it to him. I once knew his men to stand outside a man's house for 4 nights running just because Capricorn took a fancy to the man's dog.
Did he get the dog? Asked Maggie quietly.
Of course, replied Dustfinger, looking at her thoughtfully. Believe me, no one sleeps soundly with Capricorn's men standing outside the door looking up at their window, or their children's window. Capricorn usually gets what he wants within a couple of days, maximum.
Disgusting, said Eleanor. He wouldn't have got my dog.
Dustfinger examined his fingernails again, smiling.
Stop grinning like that, snapped Eleanor. And turning to Maggie, she added, you'd better pack a few things. We set off within the hour. It's about time you got your father back. Even if I don't like having to leave the book with this Capri, what's his name? I hate to see books fall into the wrong hands.
They were going in Eleanor's car, although Dustfinger would have preferred to travel in Moe's camper van.
"Nonsense! I've never driven anything like that," said Eleanor, dumping in Dustfinger's arms a cardboard box full of provisions for the journey. "Anyway, Mortimer's locked the van."
Maggie saw that Dustfinger had an answer on the tip of his tongue, but chose to keep it to himself.
"Suppose we have to spend the night somewhere?" he asked, carrying the box over to Eleanor's car. "Heavens above, who said anything about that? I intend to be back here tomorrow morning at the latest. I hate leaving my books on their own for more than a day."
Dustfinger rolled his eyes up at the sky, as if more sense might be expected there than in Eleanor's head, and began clambering into the back seat, but Eleanor stopped him.
"No, wait, you'd better drive," she said, handing him her car keys. "You're the one who knows where we're going."
But Dustfinger gave her back the keys.
"I can't drive," he said. "It's bad enough sitting in a car, never mind driving it."
Eleanor got behind the steering wheel, shaking her head.
"Well, you're an oddity and no mistake," she said, as Maggie climbed into the passenger seat beside her. "And I hope you really do know where Maggie's father is, or you'll find out that this Capricorn of yours isn't the only person to be frightened of around here."
Maggie rolled down her window as Eleanor started the engine. She looked back at Moe's van. It felt bad leaving it behind here, worse than leaving a house, even this one. Strange as a place might be, the camper van meant that Moe and she always had a bit of home with them. Now that was gone too. and nothing was familiar any more except the clothes in her travelling bag in the trunk of Eleanor's car. She had also packed a few things for Mo, and two of her books.
"Interesting choice," Eleanor had commented when she lent Maggie a bag for the books, an old-fashioned one made of dark leather that you could sling over your shoulder. "These stories about the ill-made knight and people with hairy feet..."